The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Taking Stock. Reach the microphone there closer so you can hear me, John, because I'm not loud. I'm quite a quiet person, of course.
I've moved mine
Thursday.
Away.
It's Thursday, 20th, of course, of July 2023, and we're into quarter two, is it? I think we are. John's there, John the Bull, Justin the Bear. Sorry, other way round.
Other way round, man.
So say yeah. John the Bear. If you have any comments, by all means, hit that like, subscribe button as well. And I'm not sure if you can comment unless you subscribe. I don't know, maybe that's the thing. But okay, let's start off with, just check out the indices, John, because a cracking day yesterday in the markets. Because it did feel like, you know, vaccine day back in November 9th, 2020. And so the indices looking good again, all green. FTSE up, you know, 0.6, FTSE 250, a little bit better. 350 is same, all share same. Lagging a bit, though, is the AIM all share. And unlike yesterday, if you look at the top risers here, we've got Anglo American, one of the miners is there, which were, they were the fallers yesterday, but the house builders were the winners, pretty much. But the house builders are still winning today. Yeah, Persimmon at 4.7, Barrett and Taylor Wimpey, and Rio. So it's a mixer of miners and house builders there. What are the fallers today then? Oh, hang on, what's happened? So that regulatory, Flutter Entertainment,
Gambling, yeah, it must be regulatory.
Yeah, okay.
I haven't looked, I must admit.
No, marvellous stuff. Okay, let's look at some business news, John, today, because I don't want to start with, because there's, of course, inflation is coming down and all that stuff. Well, it's rising less fast, let's say. But the first story coming is average mortgage rates have fallen for the first time in 9 months. Both 2 and 5 year rates have dropped, according to data there. So the average rate on a 2 year fixed deal is now 6.79%. Will you take out a mortgage at that rate, John? Would you say think you're getting a bargain at that rate?
I mean, if you've got to buy a house, you've got to buy a house. You haven't got a choice, have you? If you've got to refinance, you've got to refinance. I mean, it doesn't feel like a bargain, but only because of where we've, you know, been for so long with low interest rates. But, you know, if you think about it in the historical context, it's kind of, we've had worse rates in the past. It's just we have been through this period of cheap money and, you know, it's going to be painful to wean ourselves off that.
Yeah.
You know, if we think we're going to return to those ZERP, you know, zero interest rate policy conditions, then you wouldn't want to take it out. But if we think this is the new norm, higher rates, then, you know, we're not, you know, just get used to it.
Yeah.
Sounds harsh, well, but...
You know, yeah, exactly. But the thing is, why I said yesterday, why I said there's two different things, the economy and the market. Because currently, if the economy gets a little bit worse, that's better for the market. Because we're less likely to see the bank hiking. You know, and so that's what it's like at the moment. By the way, we're talking yesterday about stocks and the bear market hasn't ended. And Phil chipped in there on the comments and said, unsure why predicting the end of the bear market helps. Why? Because most stocks, I don't know if you've been paying attention to the stock market, Phil, over the last 18 months. It's not been good, but from some of the big FTSE companies, all into, you know, some international companies, they've been okay. But the rest of the indices from 250 down has taken a hammering. So, you know, it's when sentiment is risk-averse, people start selling. That's why. Who knows? Can't we just discuss quality companies beaten down by the market? I mean, I see a lot of speculative plays. And then he came, he obviously commented here, Phil, halfway through, because he came back with a second email then, saying, oh, good chat on house builders, by the way, and all that stuff. Thanks very much. And H and R. Cruise Lansdowne, thanks very much for that. So, yeah. What I would say, if you're going to comment generally on the entire you know, live thing, do it at the end.
Get involved in the middle. Okay. But no, I you know, but you, as you know, I'm sort of on Phil's side here. You know, I think that, you know, you could say it's a bear market, don't invest, you know, or it's a bull market and things are expensive, but you've got to find a way to allocate your money throughout these cycles, you know, whether you're in a bear market, bull market, you know, economic rain or economic shine. And that's why I kind of think, you know, cut out that noise. I was looking at a Fundsmith earlier today, the very, very large, in fact, probably the largest investment fund in the UK, very, very popular. And their motto is buy good companies, don't overpay, do nothing. And there is a lot of sense in that. You know, this is a very, Terry Smith, very successful fund manager. You know, he doesn't stop investing because it's a bear market. He doesn't stop investing because it's a bull market. He just, you take a disciplined approach, buys good companies, doesn't pay too much for them, and does nothing. And I think there's a lot of merit in that.
Yeah, but you're talking about, you can always compare to fund managers, but you're talking about bit different size amounts of money. A private investor doesn't have the kind of money he has. He can't hold sort of like 100 stocks or whatever. It doesn't make any sense to private investors to do that.
Terry Smith takes a fairly concentrated approach. You know,
How many stocks does he have?
Oh, I'd say sort of 30, 40, something like that. It's not huge. You know, and often, you know, the best managers are the ones that take that conviction approach. Otherwise, they just become benchmark huggers. You know,
I think even 30, 40 is pointless for private investors. You can do a concentrate on 30, 40 stocks. As a private investor, if you've got a job and you've got to work 9 to 5, whatever you do, there's no way you can keep on track on 30, 40 stocks. There's no way you can find 30, 40 great companies and keep a track on them. And I guarantee they're not all 30, 40 great companies.
But the philosophy, you know, it still stands. And, I mean, there is a lot of evidence to suggest that, you know, you get diminishing returns the more stocks that you own. You might as well buy a tracker. And that's actually what, you know, Warren Buffett has often said that most individual private investors should do. And the evidence suggests that, yeah, diminishing returns, the more stocks you own, it's sort of a number I've heard bandied around is sort of between sort of 15 and 20 should be an ideal portfolio size. Maybe even that's too much.
Well, I was talking about a couple of mates on the weekend podcast. I said, this is how it should be, essentially. And I sort of made this formula up. I said, take your age, half that, okay, but add that to your age. So say like you're 40, okay, 20 is half that, and that's 60% of your portfolio should be in if it's not your full-time job, if you've got to work and do something else. 60% of your portfolio should be a low-cost diversified fund, like a tracker or something. Mm-hmm. And then the other 40%, look for individual stocks, you know, but don't go above 10, because you've pretty much got your portfolio covered with a big, you know, diversified fund anyway. Be looking for outstanding companies and don't go crazy on them. And then as you get older, of course, that number increases, the percentage gain. So that's why I'd say. I've done surveys on this, right, on Twitter, and you'd be surprised how many people, literally private investors, would go for one or two companies in the highest risk sectors possible, like oil and gas, wildcat drills, or companies on the edge of going, you know, bust or bankrupt. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? It's insane. That is, you know, everything's gambling, but it's about probability, and the probability are on some of those stocks, you won't get your money back. The odds are against you getting a return, you know?
Well, I've never thought of investing as gambling, you know, and I've often heard it described as gambling. There are types of investing.
Cracking discussion here. Do you know why? I'll put my theory, because I thought it was hard and long and hard, okay, about why is gambling. I say, basically, what is gambling, right? And you are staking some money to make more money, but it's based on probability. And everything is in life. Everything is based on probability. Now, I give this example a couple of times. I say, if you cross your road or a busy road, all right, and you put earmuffs on and blindfolds on and walk across, a good chance, there's a high probability you may get knocked down. Now, if you take off the eye covers and the earmuffs and look around, then you probably get across. It's all about probability, and you can change your probability when you invest in stocks, whether the companies with cash generating, all that stuff, the valuations, the growth, all that. So it's all about probability. So that comes down to gambling. So essentially, life is about gambling, essentially, to a certain level. It's all about probability.
I wouldn't call it gambling. I would call it risk and risk management. You know,
gambling.
Well, I mean, I you know, if you invest in something that is, you know, a highly speculative venture, you know, there's a 50-50 chance it's going to run out of cash. You're taking on a massive risk. But the flip side of that is, if that company doesn't go bust, or, you know, does manage to raise money, or hits pay dirt if it's drilling or whatever it might be, then the rewards are going to be massive. And everything is about that risk-reward trade-off. I must admit, I can't see much of a reward for walking across the road blindfolded.
You get to the other side, like dying. That's the reward.
Okay.
That's break-even.
But the reason I do think that stock markets are not gambling, which is what I've, you know, in their truest sense, is because, you know, you can go away and give yourself an advantage. You can do research. You can, you know, take very, very calculated risks that massively improve your probability. And yeah, it goes back yesterday to what we were saying.
That you were snobbish about the word gambling. I was for a while, but I realised, no, you're right. But there's different kinds of gambling. Like, listen, I mean, putting your money into wildcat oil drills, the odds of that, of success there, probably 5 to 10 to 1, that's like exactly like betting on a second, third favourite in a horse race with 20 more runners, you know, exactly the same. There's no difference, pretty much. That's the odds. It comes down to the probability of winning or losing.
It is.
And that's it. And
it is funny.
When you go for for example, the higher up the chain you go, a market cap, like you get a company, for example, with long recurring revenues, good cash generation, good margins, they've got a history, you know, of trading well, then the chance of you getting a good return there are like odds on, you know, they're above 50%, not rather than odds against. So,
true.
But they go. So the more you go down the market cap, the more odds against, but the risk then goes, and the reward also goes up. But there's a way of manipulating that. It's all about probability of risk. Anyway, there's a commentator there saying, how many stocks do you guys own? Who is that? Casino Kid 21. I wonder if Casino Kid gambles. But Casino Kid
says, well, how many stocks do I own? I think it's about 7 or 8, actually. One of those is a fairly mundane investment trust that tracks FTSE 100, but it's actually done very well. And then the vast majority, I've got a lot in cash still in my sort of fun account, trading account, and I've got a lot that's managed through pensions.
Okay.
Which gives me exposure. The managed stuff gives me exposure to a lot of the big US tech. So it's done, it's done really well.
So generally, personally, the stocks you bought yourself, how many stocks have you owned yourself?
About 7 or 8, yeah.
7 or 8, but then you've got funds that own hundreds, is it? The funds own hundreds.
No, funds will hold a hell of a yacht, yeah. So,
yeah, but exposure to all sorts. Yeah, similar to me, my biggest holding now, and I just started scaling into this really, is FTSE 350, basically high yield dividend fund. So the highest yielding companies in the FTSE 350, and that's my biggest holding. Apart from that, I own 11 stocks, yeah. And I think even you know, and I say I look at it every day, pretty much stocks and shares. And I find it hard to keep a track sometimes on news or news coming out. And I think I could have even a lot better researched if I held even less stocks. And that's the thing, is that Warren Buffett also says that, doesn't he? He said there is diversification. He said, you know, there aren't 100 excellent outperforming countries out there, companies out there. You've got to find the ones that are the best. But he's got the advantage of spending all his time doing it. So if you haven't got a job, you know. Anyway,
that's true. I just wanted to add one thing there, and you know, on the subject of gambling and investing. And this is really funny. So a very good friend of mine who I've worked with in the past is now a very good analyst. He buys two magazines. One of them is the Investor's Chronicle. Yeah. And one of them is the Racing Post.
you'd be surprised. I hate gambling on horses. Right? Once a year, my friends invite me. We've been doing it for years. Go to Cheltenham in November, and I hate it. I hate losing money. One of the mates who organises it loves gambling. Doesn't like investing, but just loves gambling. And I see a distinct difference between that kind of gambling or that kind of staking money to make money thing. And because I see stocks and shares as a way of, you know, you can manipulate the odds in your favour, as against odds against. I mean, for a long time, I didn't say it. But if you actually position it in your head as gambling, you take it a bit more seriously and realize it's a bit more about odds. How do I sway the odds in my favor? And there's certain ways of doing that, like, you know, strong balance sheets, good growth, good value in a good sector, all that stuff. That's swaying the odds in your favor, pretty much, you know? So
I think with gambling, my view of it is that, you know, if you don't win, you lose. Whereas I don't think that's always the case with investing.
Yeah.
You know, you can lose for a bit and then win.
Oh yeah, or you can lose for a long time.
As long as the horse wins.
So, do you know what's annoying now? Supermarkets, ASDA. I don't know if you saw the ASDA boss. He was up in front of the select committee yesterday. A really poor performance, I thought. But he just denied things. Didn't say a lot. But ASDA now, they said they're going to do a round of price cuts. Anything? Is it? And it's just getting nerves at supermarkets. Every time they come under scrutiny about their prices, they start cutting prices. Thinking, well, why didn't you do it before? Wow. You know, why is it just coincided with you being under the eye of the governments and scrutiny? Are you doing it now? By the way, wheat prices. I was sharing. People thought, well, why am I sharing that wheat price? But that's the price of wheat. So you see, oddly, you know, technical analysis. I don't look at forecasting prices or any kind of metrics of that. All I look at is moving averages and price action volume sometimes. And it is odd how you see the 200 moving average hits that, comes back. but Russia's bombed some areas of Ukraine. And
They've backed out the grain deal that they had that would have allowed Ukraine to export from its Black Sea ports. That's quite significant because Ukraine is, of course, a major grain producer. Other grain producing regions have probably responded to what's going on in Ukraine by attempting at least to increase output. We've got a lot of grain producing around here. It's incredible, and the weather's meant that they've had a really early harvest. They're off already. So you see them putting second crops in, not necessarily with grain, of course. Russia. Pulled out the grain deal and then decided to launch some attacks on Ukrainian grain facilities. So, yeah, we've seen a repeat as we had sort of at the end of 2022, not quite as severe.
Yeah, look at the ship. I mean, the price of grain there. I mean, it's literally that was Ukraine back in February, the invasion by Russia, then it peaked out, it's come back down. And so you can see we're down like 60% from that. And a lot of commodities like that. And you've got this lag effect, of this being passed into the economy. It will happen, but you've got, especially supermarkets, holding up the prices a little bit, even though they're not.
But PPI
numbers are really coming down. I mean, they're actually in minus input prices.
I mean, it's quite interesting the reaction here to, quite a significant attack on grain facilities and the ending of the grain export deal and what you had at the beginning of the war, And this it does make you wonder how much speculation is often involved in sort of markets like this. Why was there any real justification part for wheat spiking to that extent back at the...
But is it a case of though where if Ukraine was the major supplier for many countries and they had to readjust find a new supply chain, and maybe some of those countries or companies have found alternative supply chains in the time being, because I think it's still really unstable in Ukraine, so maybe there's alternatives there. So it's maybe better for the market, really healthier,
Yeah, I don't know. My feeling is that there's a lot of financialization within sort of all markets and commodity markets. These things were derivatives, futures were designed once upon a time to help farmers manage the risk in production, and now they're something that people trade left, right, and centre. So I look at stocks and shares as well, and how much productive capital is there in the stock market versus the amount of capital which is in things like spread betting, which is gambling. That's money that's not going back into...
Well, it's all gambling.
Economy.
I imagine, productive allocation of capital. Look at the biggest rises. By the way, when we look at the biggest rises, we look at Vox here on the front page. Some articles here, Aura Technology. We'll talk about that in a bit. But scrolling down and you'll see... some of the most followed, and GST Technologies there, 79.59% on this news that essentially they acquired this company that has a sort of banking license that will allow them to do B2B focused neobank. And there we are. But they're going to get, I've interviewed Tone Go. I think his name is Tone Look. That's a rapper, of course.
That's a rapper.
And so fintech, basically, they're into acquisition related group to signify, expand its innovative offerings. We seek to provide a comprehensive financial service hub to all our B2B customers. They pivoted a bit there, GST. They were doing cabling and all that stuff into smart buildings, I'm sure, for a while. Now they've gone into a bit of blockchain stuff. So
I mean, it sort of does go back to what you were talking about yesterday about these companies that are sort of trying to find a place in the market and doing this, that, and the other to get there. This does look interesting, and it's only what's the market cap? 16 million. So it's not a tiddler. But it's doing $4 million of revenues a year. No forecast in the market, as far as I can see.
Yeah.
Raised a bit of money recently. It's also got some sort of crypto stuff going on. I don't know. It's one to keep an eye on. Maybe after all these sort of pivots, it's actually found a path that makes sense.
Let's hope, because if you look at the chart there, even though it's up, currently 80%, it's still long term. Had some spikes there. Look at that.
What a chart.
0.3. That's a 10 bagger in a couple of sessions. That's a nuts. Back in 2021. That was the bull market, of course. losers, right? I think there's a tale of a lesson here. Both of these, essentially, Amity Power, they've been warning about funding for a while. And if you look what they said there, they're in discussions, but the company's financial situation becomes ever more critical. Should the company be unable to secure additional funding, the prospects for recovery of value, if any, would be remote. So essentially, they're on the edge of going bust. Now, there will be people playing this. That's a gamble. Playing this to say, right, if they do get funding, it'll go crazy because there's a silly market cap of like a million. But in my mind, I try to invest in businesses that are improving. It's a small thing. Even if you invest in businesses that are improving, you can have to hit, have some setbacks, you know. But that there, you know, is for the it's brave, I mean, and it's foolish.
You know? He's a very good example of, you know, this is a company that's working on battery technology. Mm. I mean, there's lots of companies out there working on battery technology because batteries are, you know, where we're heading in terms of sort of motive power, if nothing else. And as we talked about yesterday, sort of grid stability and ultimately something a little bit more than that. And, you know, this company is working on, you know, lithium ion stuff. But just because a company is in a particular sector which is hot does not mean that company is going to do well, especially when there are lots of competing technologies. So it is a sort of cautionary tale, and I hope it raises money. I don't want to see people wiped out. You know, it's losing a lot of money. It just seems the bigger it gets, the more it loses. And there's something really. I mean, I don't like companies like that where, as they scale, they get less and less profitable. It should be the other way around. So yeah, I hope it is able to raise money. But as I say, it's a cautionary tale that, you know, even in hot sectors, there will be winners and losers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's someone on the comments saying, sitting here with a portfolio of four stocks and slaps hand at face. Now, you know, it's up to you.
It's concentration. It's just basically concentration risk. You know, so let's say you've got, you know, it's a quarter of your money in four stocks and one of them goes pop, you've suddenly got 25% less money. It's that simple. Whereas if you've got, you know, 10 stocks and you've got, you know, 10% of your portfolio in each, you know, you've still got 90% of your money if one goes pop. So it's just simple risk management.
Yeah, risk and reward is the same. If one of those goes up, you know, then you get a lot less, obviously, with 10% holding, but you get a lot less hurt, so risk and reward.
Exactly.
So another one here is worth looking at as well, John, is one of the losers, I think, because these are lessons here. And I did write this down. Lanzan Oil and Gas. Now, they've had a couple of issues because they were refusing, they're part of this license deal in Barry Row, and they were refused a license, I think, in some a lease undertaken, the refusal of an award of a lease undertaken, Barry Oil and Gas. So they've raised some money, and what I laugh at is that these are pre-written, but they do say Lanzan Oil and Gas is pleased to announce it has placed some shares at 0.1 pence. How pleased are the shareholders? Because we're down 33%, right? And basically, do you know how much they've raised? Gross proceeds of 60 grand.
It's lights on. This is lights on stuff, you know.
That's not even lights on, is it?
Well,
at the moment, with the impact.
They are talking about raising a bit more, aren't they?
140 grand, yeah. That is, I don't know how long that will last. They've got warrants in there, but that is worrying. That is literally trying to get by. I mean, they've just literally, as Amty are hanging on to the cliff and their fingers are letting go, they've just pulled themselves up a little bit. They're not quite on the cliff. They're just hanging off the cliff. But that is a little bit worrying there. But as you said, yeah. I mean, it's also, I think their market cap now is going under 1 million. But and it's a vicious cycle there, isn't there? Once you start raising and you go down, the share price goes down, you can raise less and less. And in the end, you know, you could go pop. Like I said, Amty, it looks like it's, you know, it's basically in ICU, isn't it? AMT power there. And the doctor's going to try and resuscitate it. But they may be too busy with other patients.
Well, I hope for the sake of the shareholders that something comes of it. There may be some good technology in there. You know, that technology may find its way into someone else's development streams at some point too.
Yeah. You know, it's horrible. I mean, you know, I've taken many hits over the years in companies that needed fundraising. And, you know, and one thing I learned, you learn, while like investors, you learn, it hits you in the pocket. You want to make money. If you get wrong, it hits you right in the pocket. Exactly does the opposite of what you want to achieve. And so, in this market, if you're going for a loss-making company, you've got to try and see they've got 12 months of cash, you know, operating cash, and then you've got a fair sort of margin of cushion there.
We, When we were doing our stock screens, and I think at some point we should perhaps reintroduce the stock screens within this. You know, one of the things we often looked for was cash. You know, we looked at the strength of the balance sheet, whether that be, you know, the cash to sort of, you know, survive a period of making losses, or just, you know, ability to generate cash, the ability to generate cash to pay dividends or reinvest. It's something we looked at quite a lot. And actually, you know, I kind of tracked the performance of the screens that we did. And actually, you know, the discipline we put into choosing, you know, applying those screening criteria and choosing stocks, a lot of them done really, really well.
It's amazing how you can have rules as a human. You know, you can have rules, and I've set up many a rule. I know full well if I stuck to them, I'd make a lot more money than I have done. But when you get carried away with the emotion of the story of the stock and it starts to rise or something, you almost like disregard some of the rules. And think, oh, hang on a sec, don't disregard the rules. So it's like, you know, Warren Buffett, you can get books on how Warren Buffett invests. You won't stick to them, though, because you've got a lot more money as well, so he doesn't have to get a bigger return. But it's the thing, there are rules, but they're hard to stick to, you know, and... as simple as that. I know sometimes I say that I have made some intuitive investments previously, and they've turned out well as well. Sometimes but embedded in your head is a set of rules anyway. But you know, I've done ages of research in one company, it's not done that well. And all of a sudden, with a turn of a dime, I think I like that company, sure. But when within half an hour, I've invested in it and it's done really well. I think, well, and maybe that's because you already know what you're looking for, kind of thing, through a bit of experience. But that doesn't sort of, yeah.
It's a funny old business that you can over research to the point of, you know, information paralysis, or, you know, you're researching perhaps with an outcome that you want in mind. So you know, you're almost looking for the things to support buying something in the research that you're doing. I'm not saying you're doing this, Justin, but it is a risk in spending a lot of time researching something. And there is, again, I mean, it's much harder to prove, but gut feel is a powerful force. And you know, it's really hard. You know, it's hard to quantify. It's hard. It's nothing. It feels unscientific, but sometimes gut feel is very powerful.
It is hard to call. I try to write things down, things that have gone right, and write it down. You do pick up certain things, but at the end of the day, sometimes you do get a good feeling about things. And almost sometimes, obviously, if you use just a scientific formulaic approach, you know, and you don't use your gut, in your head, you think there's something wrong there. If you don't go with that feeling, so you can go wrong. Most foreign companies, Optibiotics, yesterday announced, a bit of a news. And
yeah, still
Acuity
going.
RM, yeah, still going today. Acuity RM there. It's 8.7 million, but they've won a contract. They provide risk services and all that stuff. Just on a bit of a nightmare here, one of the most read RNS is Premier African Minerals. It's a bit of a trader stock for a long time, hoping for big time returns, but they've got a couple of things here. Offtake and prepayment. I put this agreement in there because this company had a sort of prepayment agreement with, they fall out of bed with, and now they say they owe them 34.7 million within 90 days. The Zulu plant modification, there's a force majeure there, there's funding updates. So it's three things. Well, in fact, it stems from funding. As always, if you're a loss-making company, you know, funding and cash is essential. And if you can't get that, everything else grinds to a halt pretty much, doesn't it? But there we are. And have you looked at some of the things worth looking at maybe is Shield, bit of an RS there, have you seen that?
We've written this up on the site. Wow, this is wow, this company. You know what they've done here. This is it's a drug called Accufer, which is essentially for treating iron deficiency. Shares up about 13% today. Let's have a look at the chart. This is a horrible looking chart, but this company.
Yeah, that's because they went through again. They had a funding issue a long time back, and look at that. So yeah. I remember the original sort of founder CEO. I was chatting to him, but it's gone through iterations. But now the market's in America, so they've gone with this American CEO. But
It's heavily loss making. But you know, it's got something here. And actually, if you look at the announcement today, you know, they are seeing massive prescribing of this treatment through an ever expanding network of prescribers in the US.
Yeah, do you know that chart flattening out? I quite like that. When you can put a line, like it's falling down here, 200 moving average, but when you can put a line under a chart, pretty much, you know, like that. Look, alert on a Vector there. That's down below 99 pence. That's a popular stock. But when you can put a line under a chart there, you can see that that's pretty much is bouncing off that, you know. And then there's a range here above this. A couple of times, it's trying to break, in fact, today even, 8.4, 8.5, be safe. You know, if you put an alert there, if it breaks that, then it's going to new ground maybe. But yeah. But
it's got a fair amount of cash in the bank. So, you know, we've been speaking a lot about finance and cash burn risk. And, you know, they seem to be doing all right on the cash front. They've got a runway there that's going to get them, hopefully, to profitability. And as I say, you know, this, what did we say? 10 times performance in subscriptions last year, and that's still going. There's momentum behind this drug. Very strange ad campaign they've got. Have a look at their website. It's called Ironic. I'm not quite.
Iron.
Yeah, oh, I know it's to do with iron, but I mean, it seems to be working. So who am I to criticize it? It's very strange.
Yeah. I'm going to be a bit biased now. Two stocks I own that news out recently. In fact, and today, Alpha Wave Semi Group, they do, you know, silicon, the connectivity. One of their customers is a hyperscaler in America. This means Amazon or Google or one of those guys. But because AI, of course, oh, I've got something coming on there. Because AI is obviously dominating at the moment, but AI uses a lot of data. And to get that data, you know, via sort of data centers, you have to have huge amounts of, you know, faster connectivity. The chips have to be faster. Now, this company, Alpha Wave, in fact, let me just...
Big company, this, as well.
Yes. I've been watching them for a while. Their growth is phenomenal. A lot of it's through acquisition. In fact, a lot of it's about 6% acquisition, and the rest is organic. But their results are literally... They've doubled their revenue every year for 5 years. And they are... I believe could be one of the next big semiconductor companies, and because they've got their board and everyone is. In fact, one of the guys they said there are two companies at the moment they're competing with. One is Marvel, and one is, I can't think of the other one. But the guy who founded Marvel and has left now, but he's bought a big stake in Alpha Wave Semi. But if you can see there, so new bookings up 196% to 84 million from 24 million. They are literally going to be doing about 340 million in revenue with an EBITDA about 25% of that. And they're going to be growing, and they seem to be getting more and more orders through, because they are very close to Taiwan semiconductor company and Samsung, which are the semiconductor foundries. And they've got a lot of IP, Alpha Wave, and a lot of companies use this. It's a very complex industry. I've been looking into it. It's amazing how many companies need, you know, IP to design from, but they're in the chipset. But it's a very interesting company, and I love the chart on it, because chart is AWS, and this is where it came to the market. Had a couple of problems with the auditors and the CFO, but it came to the market at 4 billion or something in America, in UK, and this is unusual for this kind of company to come to the UK. But look at that, it fell off a cliff. This is obviously doing the bull market, and it fell off a cliff. And right now, right here, you can see a definite sort of support of 120, and then it broke down, and so that now becomes resistance, and then it broke up. And today we've had 52-week highs, pretty much. But I bought in around here. But
Semiconductors is absolutely fascinating. It always has been. You know, it is what powers the world. You know, we know that. Without semis, we haven't got very much at all. The UK has always had a really good track record in this industry. Mm. You know, obviously we have ARM. It's still
they
here.
Are like I mean, ARM, for example, they got IP. I mean, ARM never actually manufactured anything. And originally, Alpha Semi, they got into a bit. Well, in fact, they don't now. So they do IP, and they use their IP. Many companies around the world, more you know, companies who need microchips tailor made for them, will use their IP. You know, there's a lot of companies using their IP around the world.
But this model makes sense. You know, so ARM is they call it fabless. In fact, ARM is, they just sell the IP. Then you've got other companies that don't have a foundry, but essentially have the chips manufactured. So they're fabulous. ARM is chipless. I used to cover this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
But you know, it's also a very difficult industry, because it is very fast moving in terms of technology. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had lots of semiconductor companies come through the London market over the years. I mean, you know, we've had, God, I can't remember their names now, but they're in all sorts of niches. And And yeah, you know, I think most of them have disappeared, but we do have a very strong track record of semiconductor design in this country. What we've never been able to do is essentially build a massive chip plant. It's never been economical to do it.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? They reckon, and they're confident in this, they're going to be doing about sort of $500 billion of revenue 2024, and they half a billion. And they're confident they'll do over a billion by 2027 by the orders coming in. And their margins are going to get bigger and better, they think, because of costs have been sunk already and they've acquired stuff. But it's worth looking at that company because a lot of people are saying they are the next Arm. And
selling a lot into China. But so
10%, they're reducing their exposure to China as well.
Yeah, but the numbers I'm looking at are saying 50%, 57%.
No, if you look at the last trade update, they're saying today's 10%, because they realised that the political situation wasn't getting well, and they obviously want to align. In fact, a good stat here, 2/3 of their customers are now in America. And what do they say? Pretty much, what is it, 20%? No. Half, let me scroll down. They have more than half of the top 20 semiconductor device companies as customers, and 2/3 are now in America. One of them is Hyperscale.
That's a very important thing to be doing at the moment, because as you rightly say, there's a lot of politics behind this industry. And China is it's another part of that risk, which has probably been why the shares have been weak, amongst other things.
Mm-hmm. One other thing, I keep banging on my Destiny Farm, I know, but it's gone through a torrid time. They did a deal on their first asset, then they did a fundraise. Shareholders were impressed with that because discounted. I didn't get in until after that. But then the CEO stepped down. I think it may be because of that. but interim CEO came in, Dr. Barbara, Deborah Barker, very experienced, and she's interim. And they announced yesterday a new CEO. And this guy is quite impressive. He's Chris Tovey. He's literally, let me share the screen with you now. I didn't know too much about GW Pharmaceuticals, but they listed apparently on AIM in 2001. They got acquired in 2017 or 2021 for $7.2 billion by Jazz Pharmaceuticals. And this Chris was a COO. GW Pharmaceuticals, and so he's so well connected. He worked at Jazz as well, and he's worked at GSK. So he's got an excellent track record. In fact, I did swap comments with the chairman at Green Chairman, who said this is a very good catch for Destiny Pharma. I don't know why the chairman's going out. Maybe the new guy's bringing his own chairman or his own team. I don't know, but I think this is a very good signing, and he's a very impressive guy. This new guy,
but GW was medical cannabis, wasn't it?
Yes, and oddly, they had two assets pretty much. And Jazz Pharmacy bought about $7.2 billion. But I'm not saying it's really the same kind of, but as a while like Destiny, they've got excellent markets in infection prevention. Phase three assets, and one is a deal on one, they're looking for a deal on the second one before the end of this year, and that could be quite a lot bigger. But yeah, so that bit of news there, and that's about it. Really, checking out any RSs you looked at today, John, worth looking at.
Well, I tell you something that is interesting. It's a little float on Aquis Aura Technology, which we had a little look at. It's carbon trading. It's a carbon trading platform that's accessible to retail investors, and obviously, you know, carbon trading over the years is an important component of managing carbon emissions during the transition. So it's interesting. I need to have a little bit more time to look at it, but I think carbon trading is going to be an important component of the transition, and bringing it to retail is an important part of that. So this could be interesting. I'm going to have a little bit more of a look at that.
What's it called?
Aura Technology.
Aura. Oh, yeah. It's an article on the front page of Vox, if you want to check it out. So, yeah. In fact, it was listed today.
Listed today. I had a look at their website as well. It's lost now, which is called auracarbon.com.
Okay.
Having a read to try and really get to the bottom of exactly how this works.
Excellent that. And thank you for watching. If you have been watching live, of course, you can catch it up if you didn't watch all of it on the website later. But hit that subscribe button and notification bell on YouTube, and then you'll get exactly the time we go live. Thanks very much. Speak tomorrow, John.
See you later, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.